This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Listen to the bite-sized business breakfast, best bits from Monday, September the 26th. Coming up, we'll be hearing more about that Mercer report. A big old focus on all things inflation by Mercer. Andrew Alzane joined us a little bit earlier on to discuss the impact that inflation is having on salaries. More and more companies understanding, or HR departments within companies are being approached by employees who want to see more money in their salary to try and abate all things inflation. We also had all the latest on that visit from the Chancellor of Germany, who came to town as part of a golf tour. He also went away with a deal from ADNOC. We look at just how significant that deal was. Cathay Pacific joined us. Vishnu Rajendran joined us a little earlier on. Vishnu is the regional head here of Cathay Pacific. Why do we want to speak to them? Because this morning, Monday morning, saw the end of the hotel quarantine that was needed for all visitors to Hong Kong. Wanted to know how significant a move that was. We also had Sharam Safai join us live in studio. Sharam works with Afridi and Angel Legal Consultants. We wanted a legal take on this latest regulation that came in on Friday afternoon, where all cohabitants need to register as part of their ajari. So all people under one roof need to be registered. And the big talker of the day was all things currencies. Euro had a shocker over the weekend. British sterling, much the same. And in fact, British sterling continued to go down in value whilst we were on air. We had a big old focus on that one and kept an eye on the rates throughout the course of the show. One of the big stories of the day is... I get knocked down, but I get up again. Will it ever come back up again? Remains to be seen. This was Kwasi Kwarteng in the House of Commons at the end of last week, laying out and explaining his tax policy.
High tax rates damage Britain's competitiveness. They reduce the incentive to work, to invest, and to start a business. And the higher the tax, the more ways people seek to avoid them, or work elsewhere, or simply work less. Rather than putting their time and effort to more creative and productive ends.
Two questions for two people in studio. This is taking nothing away from you, Serena. I'm just turning to my economist friends at the moment, all right? Two questions. First and foremost, is this Kwartingonomics or is this Trussonomics?
Well, they're calling it Trussonomics, aren't they?
Are they?
But yeah, take your pick. It's clearly there. This is, just to give you some context, it's Liz Truss is the new Prime Minister of the UK. She's been in office about, 2.5 weeks? This is her first chance to lay out her economic policies on Friday. Kwasi Kwarteng is her new Finance Minister or Chancellor. They're both new to the job. And it is, Brandy, a very controversial fiscal policy that they laid out on Friday, is it not?
It is indeed. It's an expansionist fiscal policy. They're borrowing money and cutting tax. Okay, tax cuts, particularly for the higher end of the spectrum. Nothing's that surprising for a Tory government, but the timing of it, particularly the borrowing that it's going to take to prop it up, is what has got people really concerned. And by people, I mean markets, and I don't just mean those on the other side of the House of Commons. There are supposedly enough people questioning whether or not this will work within the Conservative Party as well. That's what the papers are saying this morning. So a big question about whether or not it will have the desired effect. The desired effect, according to the Chancellor, is to grow the economy and to put money back in people's pockets. He wants to basically hope that if people are taking more of their money home, that they will spend more. Somehow that won't cause more inflation, which I think in the UK is running at, are we about 8 point-ish at the moment, above that?
8 or 9-ish and a bit, yeah, plenty.
Somehow the extra spending won't mean more inflation, which is one of the points that people are stopping and pausing, but will instead grow the British economy, and I think they're hoping for about 2.5% growth out of this. The yields on that money that is being borrowed because of where we are with the pound and everything is also causing markets, etc., to stop and scratch their heads. The markets do not like it. The pound certainly did not like it. And there is a lot of criticism flying around the place.
Bit of criticism coming from Larry Summers, who is?
Former US Treasury Secretary.
This is simply not a moment for the kind of naive, wishful thinking, supply side economics that is being pursued in Britain. I think Britain will be remembered for having pursued the worst macroeconomic policies of any major country in a long time.
Bang goes Larry's Christmas in the Cotswolds, eh?
But to be fair, he pointed to three economic policies that were dreadful. Firstly, Brexit. Secondly, Bank of England being behind the curve on inflation. And thirdly, this new tax regime, or these tax cuts from Truss and Kwarteng. So it's a triple whammy, says Larry Summers. What was the quote that you picked up of his, Brandy?
That the UK is behaving like an emerging economy that is becoming a submerging economy.
So my second question and follow-up on this one is, yeah, vested interest for a POM like me with interest over in the UK. And obviously it is a story that is obviously developing all the time. I suppose my question is, for a lot of the listeners out there who've got no links with the UK, what difference does it make to them? Does it have an impact?
It's indirect, but it is one of the UAE's top five trading partners, traditionally one of the top three big source markets for tourism. So yes, for Dubai. So yeah, it does have an impact, but obviously it's indirect.
And a lot of knock-on effects here in the UAE. It makes tourism for those coming in a little bit more expensive. It makes groceries being brought from the UK less expensive for those importing them, other goods as well. And it could mean a chance for those who own property here in the UK from the UAE. Not just Brits, by the way. London, as we know, a big property destination for those from this part of the world, to pay down their mortgage. Or does it? Our producer, Mohammed Suleiman, speaking late last night to mortgage expert, financial expert, Hasnain Mirali. He's the director of Cornelius Capital. He is based in London. And Mohammed asked him very simply, do you expect to see those overseas paying mortgages in the UK down now?
I mean, it really depends in terms of whether someone is on a fixed rate. They've got a few years left on their fixed product. It won't make a difference, and they'll continue paying the same level of interest. Their monthly repayments will continue to remain the same. But obviously, those that have a fixed product that's coming to an end, or they're on a variable rate or a floating rate, clearly it is something to think about. And not just the UK, but we've seen all major economies, whether you look at the United States, you look at the Eurozone, Switzerland, all of these economies are increasing their base rate substantially, and it's expected to go up even further. Inflation is definitely an issue that everyone sees that needs to be sort of controlled. So you'll see quite aggressive rate hikes over the next few months as well. So if you're on a floating variable rate, or your fix is coming to an end, it would be a good idea to definitely fix their mortgages, negotiate a new two, three, five-year fix, depending on what the outlook is, how people feel.
What about Dubai expats in particular?
For someone who's an expat in Dubai or US dollar, you know, US dollar denominated or linked like the dirham, clearly it's a great time to actually pay down your mortgage or deleverage slightly, because you know your dirham or your sort of dollar is buying you a lot more sterling. So clearly it's a good idea to try and pay down if your costs will go up. But at the same time, you know, just each person's circumstance will differ.
Depends, of course, as to whether you have that money to send home. But in general, what do the tax cuts that have come out from the Conservative government in the UK, that big finance package that was announced on Friday, borrow and hope, I think the FT termed it, and the lower pound all mean for the UK housing market in general?
With all of that, in the short term, house prices may go up because there's also a stamp duty cut for first-time buyers, and those are the lowest band. You know, the wider concern is that with the cost of living crisis, with energy prices, but also all other prices, and also interest rates going up, affordability for people to be able to afford housing, or you know, the actual, you know, their ability to kind of their purchasing power has reduced. So it may well be that house price in the medium to in the medium term may actually drop, and there is there is talk about that. Again, if you go across to Australia, Canada, and other markets, we've already seen a drop in house prices, and even in the United States, one of the things that head of the Federal Reserve Bank was talking about last week is the need to actually bring house price inflation down.
And that was Hasnain Murali, who's the director of the financial services company Cornelian Capital, speaking to our producer, Mohammed Suleiman, late last night when, as you've just heard there in those last comments, the pound to the dollar was about 109. It's fallen even further overnight and this morning. In an interview with the BBC, the UK Chancellor, Kwasi Kwarteng, said that those cuts that we've seen on Friday are just the beginning. Prompting market watchers and economists to ask how much lower it can all go.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where we're looking now at one of the big stories that's got people talking this weekend, that cohabitating residents in Dubai need to register with the Dubai Land Department within the next 2 weeks. We're getting your questions in. We're asking what it means for tenants and landlords. We are very pleased now to be joined by Shahram Safai, who is a partner at Afridi and Angel, the law firm. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So, what do we know, Shahram, about what's happening and why it's happening?
Well, a requirement was issued by the Dubai Land Department on Friday requiring everyone who is an owner or a tenant to register their tenancy. Now, that's expanded to whoever lives in the apartment or the villa, which includes people who are not related to you. But it also includes people who are related to you, your wife, your spouse, your children. And so it's a broad registration.
Okay. And that is the biggest question that we are getting from people this morning. Who counts as a cohabitant? Is it direct family as well?
It is, yeah. And if you look at the Dubai Land website that has the requirement, it clearly says add family members.
Okay. If you are, and here's one of the other ones that we've got from people this morning. If it is just you in an apartment, do you need to register to say it's just me?
Yes, I think everyone has to register. Think about it as a statistics where they want to know where everyone's living and how, and they're tying it in with the Jari. So even if it's you, they're saying please register through the Dubai Rest app, which is easy enough to do.
Right, which is one of the other questions that we are getting this morning. Who is it on to do this? Because in the notice that was emailed around, there was a big list of the people that this would affect. Who needs to actually take responsibility for doing this?
That's a good question. And they haven't, it's only day two, business day two. So not clear, but it seems like it's primarily the tenant or the owner who is in the property that should do it. And they've sent the message out to property managers, owners, and everyone who can they have in their database. So we'll see where it comes out at. But I think it'll be a sort of responsibility of a group of people to get it done.
Could we see changes, therefore, to tenancy contracts here going forward, which traditionally just list one person?
Possibly. This is sort of an extension of that. They're saying, listen, there is one tenancy contract, one Ijari registration, but let us know who else lives there. And they connect that data to the existing Ijari. Going forward, I could see how that would be expanded, theoretically, to add all the cohabitants.
Because at the moment, if you are cohabitating with someone, you've got flatmates, say, that you're not related to, there's an onus of responsibility and legal responsibility and financial responsibility on whoever puts down the check and has their name on the lease.
Correct. And this is, I think this is designed to try and deal with that, to give them rights as well as the obligations that are there. The other issue, and perhaps you're going to get to this, is the issue of overcrowding. If you saw that story, I'm sure you did. There's an overcrowding issue within Dubai, Sharjah, other places, where a lot of people live in one apartment. They partition it contrary to Dubai municipality rules, contrary to building rules, and that creates issues which they want to control.
And how does that fit in with a lot of the tenancies that people will have at the moment? They may have an addendum saying how many people are allowed to live in the flat.
Correct.
Or villa.
That's right. So I think, let's assume it's an apartment that says you can have three people living here and actually it's been partitioned and there's 10 people. That's in breach of the tenancy. And so that'll be an issue for the tenant for sure, potentially the landlord to the extent that the landlord has agreed to that, but definitely for the municipality, which is cracking down on that to ensure safety.
And of course, as you say, you mentioned the Ijari contract there, so the official sort of registering system here in Dubai. If everyone living in a property is therefore covered by an Ijari, what does that mean for them? What's the benefit of that?
Well, tremendous. As you know, the landlord-tenant law in Dubai has from the beginning been designed by His Highness to be tenant favorable. It favors the tenant and not the landlord because they want people to live in comfort, not be evicted, etc. And so to the extent that, that protection now extends to all cohabitants, then all those tenants will be protected by the landlord-tenant law.
What happens if those tenants change regularly? We've just got a question in asking, what if you are the owner of a holiday home or a long-term let?
Yeah, I think holiday homes may be different because they're subject to change sort of daily or every week. So that's outside the Ijari scheme. But if someone changes, I think you would update the app to show that cohabitant has changed because the list of protected individuals, if you like, should change.
Okay, super quick. We've got 1 minute left with you. Someone's asked, what about domestic help that may live in?
Good question. I would say that should also be included in the sense that they are they're living there with you. Whether they're entitled to the protections under the Ijari is a good question with domestic help. Family members you can see, but yeah, that is a good question. Something to be, I think, worked on.
30 seconds left with you, and we've got 2 weeks.
We've got 2 weeks. As you know, the Dubai government has been excellent, has really moved the city forward, continues to do that. So I think that's their optimism in getting everyone to register. We'll see how that rolls out.
Shahram Safai is a lawyer and a partner, actually, at the legal firm Afridi and Angel. Thank you for joining us this morning to talk about one of the big stories that certainly got everyone chatting this weekend, and that is the new registration requirements coming up for cohabitation here in
Dubai.
Thank
you very much. My pleasure.
Thank you.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
News at the end of the week that Japan was going to lift more of the COVID-enforced restrictions on its borders to re-welcome or welcome back tourists. And good news also for fans of Hong Kong and using its national carrier. Hong Kong's government saying that that from today, in fact, people arriving in Hong Kong will no longer have to go into mandatory hotel quarantine. Let's talk now to representative of the flag carrier of Hong Kong, Cathay Pacific. Joining us live on the line is the Middle East area manager of Cathay Pacific, Vishnu Rajendran, joins us live this morning. Vishnu, thanks so much indeed for your time this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what does, simple question to kick things off, but what does this move by Hong Kong's government mean, A, for the country and B, for Cathay Pacific?
Yeah, so this is actually a momentous occasion for us. I remember chatting on your show two months back, and the big question was, when is Hong Kong going to open? So today, Hong Kong has actually removed the mandatory hotel quarantine after almost 2.5 years. Essentially since the pandemic began. We had a 21-day quarantine last year, which reduced to 14, 7, 4, and now 0 days of quarantine with 3 days of medical surveillance. So this actually is very big news for travel to Hong Kong. And when it comes to us as an airline, essentially there are two aspects to it. So we're in a lot of celebration at the moment. We've just celebrated our 76th anniversary on Saturday. Today, Hong Kong has removed the mandatory hotel quarantine. And from next week, we begin our Dubai-Hong Kong nonstop flights from 2nd of October. So what does it actually mean for us, the removal of the hotel quarantine? So actually, over a period of time, there have been certain changes. So 2 weeks ago, the Hong Kong government removed the crew quarantine, which meant that we had more crew to operate flights and we were able to expand. And with today's removal of the hotel quarantine, the demand has definitely surged. There is a lot of pent-up demand from Hong Kong in terms of Hong Kong residents traveling overseas as well as travel to Hong Kong, as can be seen, you know, last Friday when the announcement was made, we had a surge in our call volumes and our traffic to our website. And there is definitely a very positive travel sentiment and a lot of people looking forward to travel. And from our side, it means expanding our services quite rapidly. The teams in Hong Kong are working very, very hard. We're mounting 200 frequencies next month, both long haul and short haul, and with Japan opening up as well, there will be a lot more flights to Tokyo and Osaka, as well as we're resuming flights to Haneda and Sapporo.
Richard, my colleague, talking earlier on today about there being virtual queues at the booking sites at the moment. Is that the case with Cathay?
Yes, there were queues on Friday when the announcement was made. Obviously, there was a surge with passengers trying to secure their bookings as early as possible. But things have gradually eased up.
In terms of what we will need, if I were to get on to one of those Dubai to Hong Kong flights, what sort of paperwork does one need these days?
So you do need to do a rapid antigen test within 24 hours of departure. You do need to fill in a health declaration. On arrival in Hong Kong, there is a test and go arrangement where you can do your PCR test and leave either to your home or to any hotel or anywhere of your choice. You do not need to wait till your results come. There is a amber code that is given to you, and 3 days of medical surveillance, which means you can go anywhere except for crowded places such as restaurants and bars that require you to show the vaccine certification.
In terms of the flights themselves, I mean, a number of our listeners and viewers will have done that well-trodden path between Dubai and Hong Kong in the past. Getting on to a flight now, is it going to be significantly more expensive to fly to Hong Kong post-pandemic than was pre-pandemic?
Well, it is a function of demand and supply, essentially. But at the moment, we are seeing bookings come in. There are certain, we're seeing pickup, particularly during the Christmas season. But yeah, I mean, the fares still remain as they were. It's essentially a function of demand and supply. And as the demand picks up, the fares could get more expensive.
In terms of the journey that you, Vishnu, and the rest of the Cathay team have been on as well, we know it's been a long one as the world has come to terms with COVID-19 and the pandemic as a whole. Is this the sort of the final move? I hate to use that word, a final move, but is this obviously a move in the right direction, but light at the end of the tunnel to get back to some sense of normality?
Absolutely. I think this is a moment we've been waiting for. At the beginning of this year, we had to cut down capacity significantly. And with this announcement, there's definitely, it's very positive looking ahead. And there's a lot of work going on to expand our frequencies. And we do hope to get back to normal as soon as possible.
Questions are flooding in from the Cathay faithful out there this morning, Vishnu. One here from one of our listeners saying, will Cathay be able to take transit passengers now via Hong Kong?
Absolutely. So there is no PCR requirement as well for transit passengers. Transit passengers just need to meet their destination requirements. And we're offering great connectivity from Dubai via Hong Kong to several destinations in Asia, namely Japan, Korea, Philippines, Indonesia, as well as to Australia, to Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane and Perth.
In terms of the rest of this year and people wanting to get on to Cathay flights between now and the end of the year, is the advice, Vishnu, to consult the website, to watch that space?
Absolutely. Passengers can consult the website. They can also call our customer care department if they need further clarifications, as well as all travel agencies in Dubai will be able to offer them bookings on Cathay Pacific.
Vishnu, always good to catch up with you. And good news coming from all Team Cathay Pacific. Vishnu, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. And congratulations
thank
for getting
you.
Back in the air.
Thank you very much.
A big thanks to Vishnu Rajendran there, Middle East Area Manager, Cathay Pacific, joining us live on the line. That off the back of the announcement that Hong Kong's government says that from today, people arriving in Hong Kong will no longer have to do mandatory quarantine.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Anyone see the German motorcade in town over the course of the last couple of days? either down in the nation's capital or elsewhere. Do share your thoughts. We know it was a much advertised visit, this one. Olaf Scholz visiting not just the UAE, Rich, but the region as a whole.
Yeah, it was his Gulf tour. Basically, he needs gas. And so he came to the UAE, Saudi Arabia and Qatar, not unsurprisingly. Did he leave with any? Well, a bit, but not an awful lot. Will he be going back to Berlin saying that was a successful trip? Depends, I guess, which headline you're reading, for example. The National would say yes. The UAE and Germany signed major energy deals to supply gas. However, Bloomberg is not quite so bullish. Germany secures just one tanker of gas during Scholz's Gulf tour, and that was from the UAE. It's going to be delivered to the northern coast of Germany around about Christmas time this year when one of their floating terminals opens. Let's get the thoughts, shall we, of Ed Bell, his Senior Director of Market Economics, Emirates NBD.
This weekend also saw the visit of Olaf Scholz. The visit essentially is to help Germany secure more energy supplies as flows of natural gas from Russia have been suspended as a result of sanctions on that country. During the visit, we saw a major deal between ADNOC and RWE, which is one of the biggest German utility companies, for flows of liquefied natural gas supplies, and an agreement between the president of the UAE, Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, and the German chancellor to help improve energy security and aid industrial growth. Germany is very, actually quite limited in its energy options right now, as it had been so dependent on flows of natural gas and oil from Russia. And its policy of linking pipelines between the two countries is now looking like a major vulnerability. For the big energy exporters in the region, particularly those that do export natural gas, like the UAE does, building further relationships with what should be the economic powerhouse of Europe will be a further boost to their economies immediately, but also over the medium term.
Ed Bell of Emirates NBD.
One of the other big stories of the day has been the Mercer report, which has hit desks this morning. Nizar, thank you very much indeed to you for your text message. The economy is booming. Most businesses will give salary hikes early next year. Buckle up for more inflation. Those are the thoughts from Nizar.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary survey. It's a spot survey. So they're just looking very quickly and very timely at one thing, which is inflation. Asking whether, well, two big questions really. Are employees asking for more money and are they getting it? Yes, we're asking. Around two-thirds of firms say that they are getting employee requests for money to cope with cost of living. Are they getting it? Three-quarters, 84%, saying that they have not yet adjusted compensation this year to cope with higher prices.
We've been speaking to Andrew L. Zane. Andrew is the Senior Associate Consultant of Korea, MENA region, at Mercer. We asked Andrew, what do we know about the thinking in the boardrooms of these large multinational companies? Mercer, remember, the authors of said report.
There are two-thirds of companies that have heard from their employees that this is something that they're requesting. And if we look at the statistics from our survey, right, there's 53% are either planning to take action or have taken action. So it's definitely on their minds.
I'm glad it's on their minds. But being on the minds of HR or the finance department doesn't pay the rent, does it? Doesn't pay your bill down at Lulu.
Might be on your mind. It's not on the balance sheet, though, at the moment, is it?
Exactly.
Ain't no one getting... But maybe they are. I mean, people have been texting in this morning saying, oh, actually, no, we're expecting pay hikes at the beginning of next year. I just think we're in that sort of weird part of the year where it's... The reality bites at this time of the year, as opposed to the sort of optimism you get at the start of a brand new year and the prospects that could come round. Cost, yeah, going up for your staff, but they're going up for businesses as well.
Yeah, they are indeed. And this is where people worry about getting sort of a wage spiral when it comes to inflation, that you put up wages, so therefore your overheads go up, so you need to put up the price of your products, which means that people think that stuff costs more, so they ask for their wages to go up and onwards it goes. It's really interesting in this survey. Just 16% say that they've done something to put more money in people's pockets, to steal the UK Chancellor's phrase this morning. And it's not necessarily pay rises, because that includes one-off lump sum payments, off-cycle salary increases, so right, you pay, but also housing allowance increases. And Mercer has said to us this morning that, you know, firms might be looking at short-term actions that are less permanent than putting up someone's salary.
So a one-off allowance or something like that, so that it doesn't become a a liability, because as we know, as soon as, like you say, as soon as you make it a salary increase, that's it. It is a liability going forward, and it's very, very difficult to unwind those.
Yeah, and I was about to say for when prices come down, but one of the big questions is, do prices ever come down? I was thinking about this last night in relation to rent. Having the rent conversation as everybody is at the moment, you know, what does the RERA index say? What does my contract say? What can I do? What can the landlord do? Etc. And someone sort of said to me, oh, well, you know, when they come down in a couple of years, and I thought, okay, we have had years when you are negotiating downwards and we've all, you know, benefited from that in some way, unless you're the landlord, in which case you're not benefiting. You're on the other side of that equation. But over time, they just go up, don't they? I was trying to dig out, and I don't keep a vast amount of paper, but I do keep things that I think might be amusing later. And I was trying to dig out my first rental contract from 1999, where I know that I was paying around 26,000 dirhams a year. My best mate, who was paying 1,000 dirhams less, thought that I was absolutely being done.
This was down in Karama, Bir Dubai?
It was down in Bir Dubai on the street in which we all lived at the time. So over time, yes, you'll have years when, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but I don't think I am. You'll have years where it goes down a bit. You know, you're negotiating down, you're negotiating up. But over time, it's for the same reason that your parents can tell you they remember when they bought a packet of crisps for half a p, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough as well. Things have always been cheaper in the past, haven't they? And therefore, I mean, I don't think things will come down that significantly. I think rents have to, because that's a sort of market demand. But will the price of a steak? I don't think so.
Well, we've all lived through in terms of rent, because it's the biggest check that most of us write every month, isn't it? Okay, mine's a mortgage, but rent, whatever, same thing. It's, for most of us, it's the biggest check. And I've lived through, I think, at least two, maybe more cycles here where rents have absolutely fallen off a cliff. I remember 2008, we were chatting about this earlier, when I moved back from London, mid-2008, Dubai was booming, the world was in a mess, and there was lots of talk about decoupling. Signed up for an apartment. I remember my wife and I down in the downtown area, 160 grand a year. The following year, mid-2009, renewed at 110. And Brandy Scott, you've had a similar example, haven't you? We talk about the keys for your apartment, because the keys for your apartment was the last apartment, had on them a sticker with the price of the rent, which was 50 grand more than you were paying, wasn't it?
It was three digits. I was paying two.
Yeah. So it happens. Tom's a landlord. You've been through this, haven't you, mate?
Oh, yes. Very much so. And continue to as well.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.